Order and please stand and we'll pledge allegiance to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We will now have a presentation, which May 2011 as Older Americans Month in Stanislaus County, and Marjorie Palermo.
Good morning, Super Chairman Matisse, members of the board, Mr. Doring, Mr. Robinson. My name is Marjorie Palomino. I'm the Director of the Department of Aging and Veteran Services. We are here this morning to ask this board to proclaim May as Older Americans Month. Older Americans Month was established in 1963. Since then, every president has issued a formal proclamation during or before the month of May, asking the entire nation to pay tribute in some way to older adults. In addition to issuing a proclamation in Stanislaus County, the Area Agency on Aging would like to ask this board and the entire community to please remember to honor and thank all the senior citizens in this county for their contributions. Older Americans are more active in community life than ever before, and what is remarkable is the extent to which older Americans themselves are supporting each other. As the new generations of seniors become better educated, more financially secure than their predecessors, and more active, they are stepping up to help another seniors as well. We have seniors connecting with other seniors by delivering meals, helping with home repairs, assisting with shopping, and offering companionship and counseling. These seniors are volunteers who stay active and engaged in our communities. Their energy and commitment reminds all of us that we should all do our part to ensure older Americans live with the dignity and independence they deserve. The Area Agency on Aging would like to call upon all our citizens, not only during the month of May, but throughout the year, to publicly reaffirm our commitment to senior citizens and to renew our dedication to their well-being. On behalf of the Stanislaus County Area Agency on Aging, I would like to thank all of the senior citizens in our county for your contributions. And at this time, I would also like to ask our Commission on Aging, a group of volunteers whose advocacy efforts have helped improve the quality of life of hundreds of seniors in our county. I would like to ask, I think we have a couple of members, if they can please stand up so they can be recognized. Commission on Aging members. Thank you, Commission members. You are making a big difference in the lives of hundreds of seniors in our county. Once again, I would like to ask the Board of Supervisors to proclaim May as Older Americans Month. In accepting the proclamation on behalf of the Commission on Aging, is Commission Member Ken Hannigan. Thank you.
Thank you. We're on, or not. Are we on? Okay.
Thank you.
Greetings.
Good to see you once again.
Thank you.
It's my pleasure to present to all of you from the Board of Supervisors proclaiming May 2011 as the Older American Month in Stanislaus County. I note here it says, whereas our community can provide the recognition and respect for improving the quality of life for older Americans by increasing their opportunities to remain active and engaged in community life, providing individual service and support service to maintain the dignity, independence, and self-determination of older Americans as they age, combating attitude by honoring their past and present and future contributions. But I also want to add to that We want to thank all of the older Americans for all the contributions that they made to our community. As time goes on, we find that the experience and the knowledge and those who made Stanislaus County what it is began with our older citizens. So once again, we want to thank you very much for your contribution and the recognition that is due. And at this point, would you like to say a few words?
Thank you. I accept this on behalf of the Commission on Aging and also the 84,526 seniors that we have in our community. I did a quick calculation just so you know. I took 85,000 times 65 years, and that's over 5 million years of time that the seniors that we have currently have spent in our community. So I just ask each and every one of you to spend a few extra minutes with seniors in your lives this month. Maybe take them to brunch or in the backyard or a walk to the park, and remember to always bring the grandchildren over for a visit. Thank you.
Thank you. We seniors appreciate it. Thank you. At this time, public comment, we have Dean Harbor. Please step up.
Deborah Harbor.
Deborah Harbor?
Yes.
Thank you. My name is Deborah Harbor, and I reside in Modesto, California. I'm calling, stepping up to talk. I've been writing letters for numerous years throughout the community over various items. That was an awesome presentation, and it was an honor to be here to see that. Anyway, I'm going to start off with one thing. If we start off with the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and talk to each individual in the community as a human being first, and then their productive address after that, you know, aging, young person, it would just allow volumes of progress in interaction throughout the county. We have a clear, difficult area in interacting and communicating from our government employees to citizens. I don't really call them civilians, but similar to military versus civilians. We're all human beings, and we all live on this planet together. So we all have to kind of like mingle in the community together. On 3/18, I was using the break room in the basement, and I had somebody, a police officer, arrive in that break room and ask me to leave. I was peacefully using it. I go in and out. He was very kind, very non-invasive, and I had an okay informally to use that break room, pop to something in the microwave, eat, and go about my business in the building here. And that all of a sudden on 3/18 became unclear. It's an inconsistency for what I call to manipulate the situation. As it turned out, through the conversation, the officer told me that a county employee on the second floor, which is where I do some research, called and asked me to be removed. The county employee wasn't even in the break room. They were on the second floor. So I did letter writing and paperwork on that, and I haven't heard anything from that. Let me rephrase that. On 3/21, I forgot all about the Friday incident because it was benign and very pleasant. On 3/21, which is from Friday to Monday, two officers stopped me on my way out of the break room. I courteously asked when I go in the break room, am I okay here? Because it's unclear. There's no posting on whether it's a county, city break room only, or if it's open to the public. So I get permission each time I'm in there with employees. This is a courtesy. This time it was a police officer. Well, he became formal and started drilling me and went into a total police thing on it. And so I said, I'm sorry, you just went formal, so could I have an incident number? I was leaving the break room to prevent any further because, one, he said it was an employee room only, employee break room only. So I was leaving the building, and another officer stopped me at the elevator, detained me for at least a half an hour. He took me from the elevator through the lobby and out to the flagpole. Now, this is what's significant. There may have been, when I lived at the Riley Apartments, this county employee actually may have been in the apartment complex. It had a flagpole. So the point being, you cannot. Employees cannot use their public venues to work a personal venue. If it's public, it's public. If it's not public, it remains closed. And it's clearly posted that way. We can't be inconsistent back and forth. So on 3/21, I had two officers detain me for a half an hour after I was already leaving the break room, which is a little bit beyond it's harassment, but nobody sees it that way. So in writing the letters throughout the community on the break room, I asked that everybody think upgrade. Rather than get defensive and get combative and talk mean and what I would respectfully call obnoxious, can we think Universal Declaration of Human Rights in the spirit of brotherhood, communicate to each other, get consistent, post things where it's clear. So at this moment, my question specifically is, because I'm not very good at speaking publicly, I apologize, is this break room in the basement of this building open to the public to use, or is it a county city employee break room only? Do we have that info yet? I've asked for it, but I haven't received it yet. We're not sure. Okay. Uncertain. Who would I ask this question to? Because I've asked numerous people and had different answers. Do we have that info? Not yet.
This is a very good question, certainly relevant. This is a public building, and I believe that we'll do some additional research. The Joint Powers Agency actually administers the building on a day-to-day basis, which is the city and the county. It's a third agency that represents both the city and the county. My initial thought is that this is a public building, and so that particular break room would be open and available to the public since it is generally open and accessible during working hours.
Okay, thank you. And that was the what agency?
The 10th Street Joint Powers Agency.
Joint Power. Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you. Does anyone else have any public comment this time? If not, we'll go to scheduled matters of 9:05. Consent calendar, pardon me.
I do have one matter that I'd like to request be removed for today. We'll bring it back on a subsequent meeting. It's item B11, approval to designate the Health Plan of San Joaquin as a local initiative health plan in Stanislaus County for Medi-Cal managed care patients in accordance with the state of California's two-plan model for Medi-Cal managed care effective January 1, 2012, presented by the Health Services Agency. We have received a notice of intent to protest and or appeal from legal counsel representing Anthem Blue Cross of California Partnership Plan Incorporated. Letter came to us after 5 p.m. yesterday evening, so we have not had a chance to fully review the content of the letter so that we could adequately respond to it. So at this stage, I would request that we remove item B11, and then we will schedule it in the follow-up meeting.
We will remove B11. Are there any additional? Anyone on the board? Okay, may I have a motion?
Motion to approve consent calendar list item B11.
Is there a second?
I will second.
Thank you. Then moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those in opposed? And passed. Now at this time, we will go to the scheduled matter of 9:05, which I believe is B13. Rick Robinson.
Rick? Actually, the 9:05 item is a public hearing to consider the adjustment of fees.
Okay, pardon me. This one would be Matt Machado. We'll get it straightened out.
and that is my fault. I apologize to the chair. The removal of item B11 got our cadence off a little bit, so my apologies for that.
Well.
Found it. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, Mr. Robinson, Mr. Doering. I'm Matt Machado. I'm your Public Works Director. And this morning I have a brief presentation for the set public hearing for this morning of amending existing fees and the establishment of a new fee. Public Works provides services as required by law to the public and the development community. Some of the services encompass construction, inspection, plan review, and project review. These services that we provide cannot be paid for by our current revenue source of the gas tax funds. Our last permit fee increase was in 2010, and a little history on that. Our first of a five-year series of amendments started in 2009. Prior to that, our fee structure had not been increased since 1991, and so there was a substantial deficit that Public Works was funding, and so we've been implementing a five-year amendment process to reduce that deficit. So by year five, we hope to eliminate the vast majority of the deficit that we've seen over the last years. Our current proposal today for this third year of our amendment of our fee structure is to be based upon an average rate of $80 per hour. Our actual cost, our average cost of personnel providing a service is $103 per hour, resulting in a deficit of $23 per hour. For your information, year five, which is a couple of years from now, will have a proposed rate of $100 per hour, thereby eliminating the vast majority of the deficit. Our actual revenues and corresponding deficit will certainly vary depending on the number of applications and services that we perform. Our proposed fees are based upon average time and cost. We do use the vast majority of our fees are based upon a flat rate, and we base that upon average time it takes to provide those services, and we monitor that on an annual basis. Many of our fees include a base permit fee, which includes the cost to administer the program, to provide floodplain analysis, and to provide some GIS updates. Our flat rate for routine inspections is $160. That's a two-hour average is what we calculate. And then for construction inspection, it's based upon the number of hours. And we'll see in this next table, some of our rates are based upon flat rate, whereas others are actually based upon the actual time it takes, and we do require a deposit at the beginning of the project for project review. The lower three are based upon the time it takes for us to provide the service. Actually, I'd like to back up here once. Right there in the middle is our new fee, which I'll cover here shortly, but just to give you a glimpse of it, it's a utility trench cut fee. It's a new one for the county, and the fee that's being proposed is $7.30 per square foot of trench area. A little bit about that new fee. According to relevant studies, pavement lives were reduced on the order of 15% to 50%, depending on the number and extensiveness of pavement cuts. And what that means is that when someone comes in, primarily utility companies, and they cut up the streets and they put in whatever they're going to do, gas pipes or electricity or other utilities in the ground, no matter how good a job they do in recompacting and reconstructing that trench, the life of that street has been damaged, and significantly. And so this is an effort to collect revenue so that we can overlay those roads on a more frequent basis. This national study that I reference here actually calculates a national average of $10.20 per square foot would be the required amount to repair the roads. But based upon our construction values in our area, we calculate it to be $7.30 per square feet. And of course, this fee would be in addition to our standard encroachment permit structure. And so with that, Our recommendation today is to conduct the public hearing and to introduce and waive the first reading of an ordinance to establish this new fee and to amend the existing fees for Department of Public Works. And I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have them. Thank you.
Any comments by the board? If not, we'll open the public. Does the public have any comments at this time? In that case, I'll bring it back to the board, and may I have a motion?
I'm making a motion we approve the staff recommendations.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Passed. We now will go into the scheduled matters of B, which will be Dave Cogdale, Sr.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. A pleasure to be here this morning to make this presentation to ask for your approval of our revised fee schedule. And I want to point out that the majority of the fees on that schedule are not being increased. They have remained the same. The major revision that we're asking for today is actually the addition of a fee to address an issue that has become a costly one for assessors throughout the state of California. As you're all well aware, the assessor is charged with reappraising property when it transfers within a given year in order to enroll the appropriate base year value on the assessment roll for that year. There are a number of transfers that are exempt under the law, and among them are transfers between parents and children, and grandparents and grandchildren. But in order to be eligible for an exemption, it's important, or it's required rather, that a claim be filed. The law currently allows that that claim can be filed within a 3-year period. The problem that that creates is that the assessor, again, is charged with doing their work within the year that the property transfers. When we receive a preliminary change of ownership report, which is required by law when a property transfers, one of the questions that's asked on there is whether or not this is a transfer between parents and children or grandparents and grandchildren. And if that's the case, if they've so designated on the form, then we notify them, send them a notice and ask them to file a claim that we can process to, again, exempt them from the reassessment of the base year value. The first claim is 45 days. They don't respond. By law, we send out a second. They have 60 days to respond to the second. If they don't respond to the second, we have, it is in our duty to reappraise the property and enroll a new base year value. Again, because of the 3-year requirement or allowance under the law to file a claim, the property owners can come in after that second notice deadline has expired, file the claim after the assessor has done their work, which requires us to go back and obviously spend a considerable amount of time undoing that assessment. And that's really what this fee is to cover. The law was established in January of 2009, Senate Bill 1233, that allows assessors to do this. In your package, you have the criteria that we use to establish the fee. The law establishes a ceiling of $175. The fee cannot be more than that, but it's really to reflect your costs. Our costs are estimated at about $189, I believe, to actually do the processing. So, again, that's why we're requesting that this fee be established at the $175 level. That's really basically it, the request that we're making today. I've also included in the packet for your information a listing of other counties throughout the state that have taken this action and have enacted the fee, and you can see that the majority, if not all of them, are at the $175 rate. So with that, I would respectfully request your approval of the revised fee schedule.
Any concerns of the board? Questions?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just have a comment, and I think I'm in support of this fee, and solely because we give two notices that if that new property owner ignores those two notices and we go through the work to do it, then we should get paid to undo it. So I think it's a fair fee because of the notices, and I will support.
Any comments from the audience? If not, I bring it back to the board.
I'm just going to add, Dave, first, welcome.
Nice to see you here. You.
And thank you. And I compare this to us doing a tax return for somebody, take this back to the private sector, and we, based on the information that comes to us, we prepare a return. Then they come back to us after we've finished a return and ask us, provide us more information and say, now you've got to change it. Well, we've got to charge for that.
Right.
Just, and the county's in the same boat, so.
Yeah, and you know, it's really one of the things that's really kind of stood out to me in the 4 months that I've been in office is the overwhelming amount of work that we do to bend over backwards really to try to assist the taxpayer through this process. We know it's difficult and cumbersome and confusing, and we do our best to try to certainly work with them in every way we can, but this is one of those examples where it goes way above and beyond and becomes very expensive.
Okay. Someone make a motion, please.
Motion to approve.
Second?
Second.
Been moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Passed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Okay, now we go back to B-13. Rick Robinson.
Thank you, Chairman Monteith, members of the Board, Council Doring. It is my pleasure to speak to you this morning to present the County of Stanislaus 2011 supervisorial redistricting process. The process is going to be substantial, and I would, if being completely honest, say somewhat daunting. The process of redistricting has actually commenced. We've been working on it for a couple months now, but will formally commence with your assumed approval of staff recommendations and your hope for approval of staff recommendations this morning. And will continue pretty much uninterrupted and very high levels of activity from now to the end of August, at which time we hope to have completed our process. We have a statewide requirement that the board adjust their supervisorial district boundaries the year following each 10-year federal census. Each district is required by law to be nearly equal in population. There's not a clear and immediate definition for that, but we do establish one through the development of our charter. The county is required to do an analysis of the existing supervisorial districts and adjust the boundaries using certain criteria to obtain the desired population balance. The criteria that are used to determine the supervisorial district lines include topography and geography, cohesiveness, contiguity and integrity, compactness of territory, and community of interest. The most recent federal census data is the data used to determine population in each of the supervisorial districts. We have critical project delivery dates and deadlines. We're asking you today to approve the project charter and funding for this project. I do need to make a clarification, and I'll note it again when the particular slide comes up as the issue of funding is up. In the Modesto B, there was a report that the consultant cost was $100,000. That's the total project cost. We established a consultant cost that is not to exceed $40,000 for the duration of this project. The second item, you would form a redistricting committee, the composition of which we will share with you in a moment. The project team, you will be selecting names for an ad hoc advisory committee, which you would approve formally by board action on May 3rd. We have a series of public meetings that we are now scheduling. They will be meetings out in the districts, June 13th, 14th, 15th, and 28th, 29th, and 30th, six in all out in the district. Additionally, we have two public hearings that are scheduled, August 16th, which with a final public hearing, and we hope adoption of the supervisorial district boundaries to occur on August 23rd. The elections officer has somewhat different time frames, and we just wanted to make you aware of what those are. And those time frames differ depending on the facts and evidence at the time the decision has to be made. So if an election day is scheduled for February 7, 2012, in a worst-case scenario with federal, state, and local candidates, precinct modifications would begin on August 1st and end on September 1st, 2011. The best-case scenario, no non-presidential candidates, again with election on February 7th, 2012, precinct modifications would begin August 31st, 2011 and be completed by November 11th, 2011. Two other dates with an election date of 3/16/2012, modifications would begin on August 31st and be completed on September 29th. And for June 5th, 2012, precinct modifications again August 31st and would be completed by December 29th, 2011. And I do need to express my appreciation to Lee in the elections office for putting this just slide together. It was very, very complex, and she worked very, very closely in developing the time frame for our benefit. The project goals, the population of each supervisorial district is required to be as nearly equal in population when factoring topography, geography, cohesiveness, contiguity, integrity, compactness of territory, and community of interest. As you can tell, there are many, many factors that have to be considered. The goals of the project include that we adjust the boundaries to be equally populated within 2%. And as I indicated to you at the outset, there's no concrete number that's established in the statute. We're proposing that we dial it in very tightly and that our populations be within 2%. Rectify 100% of the census blocks with the county GIS base map, update operational processes within county departments to ensure the products delivered by the project are maintained and updated on an ongoing basis to an acceptable level of accuracy. The project charter is a key document as we proceed forward with this project. Covers all of the aspects of the project and includes a process to identify and resolve items which require clarification. The deliverables of this project, accurate up-to-date supervisorial district boundaries, descriptions, and maps, a county geographical information system, GIS base map, with reconciled census tract boundaries and supporting 2010 census data, and a GIS base map overlay with all newly adjusted associated elect boundaries. Voter precincts and maps reconciled with newly adjusted elected boundaries and census data, intranet access to the maps by the Redistricting Steering Committee, project team, and Elections Department, and ongoing district layer edits to be performed by County GIS as information is provided to them. Project team would coordinate resource allocation, monitor the project schedule, provide technical assistance to the Redistricting Steering Committee and to the Citizen Advisory Committee. The Redistricting Steering Committee would investigate population changes based on 2010 census data, produce supervisorial district alternatives within guidelines, obtain public input on the redistricting process, consider, evaluate, and incorporate public input, finalize options for board consideration, and provide guidance to the board on redistricting issues. And I might just add, you're seeing a whole lot of different committees, and these actually are each formal committees within the redistricting process. As we get towards the end of the slide, I'll provide you a summary so you can kind of see how they fit together a little bit. The Ad Hoc Citizen Redistricting Advisory Committee you authorized on April 5th, 2011. The application period opened on April 6th and closed on April 20th, 2011. I will indicate to you that we did receive at least two applicants from each of the five districts. The overall composition, 11 registered voters of the county. They would serve in an advisory capacity to the Board of Supervisors. And if the advisory committee does not agree with the county staff working on the series of recommendations for redistricting, the advisory committee may independently and separately submit to the Board of Supervisors for the public hearing up to and no more than 2 alternative plans. The selection process, one member from each district would be selected by the board member, one member from each district selected at random, one member selected at random from the remaining qualified applicants. Whoever's left after finding the 10, we pour into one holding, I think we have bags, bag, and final name would be drawn as the 11th member. We will identify the members today with your approval, but formal appointment will occur on May 3rd, 2011 as a separate board action. The responsibilities of the Ad Hoc Citizen Redistricting Advisory Committee include attendance and participation in community meetings, working with Redistricting Steering Committee, and meeting with county staff to participate in the development of supervisorial district lines. The Ad Hoc Citizen Redistricting Advisory Committee does have a very significant role in the development of recommendations for redistricting, and will have a high level of involvement and, in fact, a fairly substantial time commitment. The project client is the Board of Supervisors. Your responsibilities include the approval of the project charter, authorization of funding for the redistricting process, and ultimately adoption of the adjusted supervisorial district boundaries. Chief Executive Officer is a project sponsor. My responsibilities include the provision of guidance to the charter working groups and to act as liaison between various county departments whenever issues arise. County Council will provide technical and legal advice to the project team and the redistricting committee. County agency responsibilities, project client is the board, project sponsors we indicated as the CEO, project manager David Jones, senior management consultant in the chief executive office, project team, staff from the CEO's office, county council, elections, public works, planning, the assessor, and SBT. These are typically not the department head, but support staff with technical expertise in the areas necessary to accomplish a successful project. The steering committee has specific appointments. The chief executive officer, county council, the public works director, clerk recorder, registrar of voters, the assessor, the planning director, the director of SBT, and 3 individuals, David Jones, Sandy Regalo, and Mark Loser, the chief executive officer. Responsibilities of various departments are fairly significant. We wanted to provide an overlay, an outline of what those could be. Public Works Department would overlay the current supervisorial districts on the 2010 census information, adjust 2010 census block boundaries with the county GIS base map, incorporate adopted supervisorial districts onto the county GIS base map, incorporate district boundaries into the GIS system when made available for those districts that conduct elections, and provide technical assistance to the project team as required. SBT and the planning department will provide peer review of the data systems and processes, GIS assistance as required, and other technical assistance as required to accomplish a successful project. Elections office will provide support to the working groups on elective district boundaries and work to create new precinct boundaries as approved by elections onto the county GIS base map. We are recommending today the approval of an agreement with a consultant, Q2 Data and Research LLC. This consultant is quite highly regarded statewide. The consultant is the State Redistricting Commission's selection as the consultant to assist with the redistricting mapping functions. Scope of work of the consultant includes support at public meetings and would assist in the design of up to 6 public meetings, provide a short formal presentation for the public on the scope, purpose, timelines, and legal issues of the redistricting process, facilitate the public meetings in collaboration with the Ad Hoc Advisory Committee on Redistricting, and request input from the public on the community of interest criteria as provided for in the State of California Elections Code. Advise County GIS and support staff on visualizing and capturing information for analysis. They would provide Ad Hoc Citizens Advisory Committee orientation, a 4-hour training for the Ad Hoc on Advisory Committee on Redistricting. Would assist the county in developing a fact sheet on redistricting pursuant to the State of California Elections Code, including redistricting criteria and an overview of communities of interest along with illustrative examples. Would also support the county's efforts in determining the potential that the Voting Rights Act may pertain to supervisorial districts in Stanislaus County and therefore affect our redistricting efforts in 2011. We'll be working closely with our legal staff on a legal basis and with a consultant on a technical basis to answer this important question. Consultants required to attend to Board of Supervisors public hearings, discuss the role of the consultant and the methodologies used in arriving at the recommendations, provide technical analysis of the various redistricting proposals, work with County GIS staff to provide professional technical analysis of up to 5 redistricting proposals that could be considered by the Board of Supervisors to ensure that each proposal meets the legal requirements set forth in the California Elections Code, the United States Constitution, and the Federal Voting Rights Act. The estimated project budget, and this is where I indicated at the outset that we do need to make a correction to what was reported this morning in the Modesto B. The total project budget proposed to you is $100,000. The consulting portion of that is $40,000. Public Works staff as a non-general fund department, GIS support, we're anticipating a budget of about $20,000, materials and supplies, $12,500, advertising and community outreach program, $17,500. The consulting, as I indicated, $40,000, and then the project contingency of 10% or $10,000. I would also point out that we anticipate that the $100,000 is a not-to-exceed number. We feel very confident that we can bring in the number in 20 to 30% less than that. However, we want to make sure that we do this right the first time, that we've considered all potential contingencies, and even if we can't mitigate the contingencies, we want to be able to report them to you. Excuse me. Staff recommendations include approve the project charter, which includes the project budget and defines the structure, processes, and deliverables of the supervisorial redistricting process. Approve the redistricting steering committee comprised of the chief executive officer, county council John Doering, public works director Matt Machado, clerk recorder registrar of voters Lee Lundergan, assessor Dave Cogdale, planning director Kirk Ford, strategic business technology director Marcia Cunningham, and Chief Executive Office Staff David Jones, Mark Loser, and Sandy Regalo. Approve the project team consisting of Dean Wright of County Council, Pat Cavanaugh, and Aaron Rosa of Clerk Recorder Elections, Diane Ha, Poe Keek, and Aaron Harris of Public Works, Juan Gonzalez and Diane Rodriguez of Planning, Don Ottman of the Assessor's Office, Debbie Siebrick of Strategic Business Technology, David Jones, Mark Loser, and Sandy Regalo of the Chief Executive Office. Authorize Chief Executive Officer to enter into a professional services contract with the Q2 Data and Research LLC for consulting services. Authorize the Project Steering Committee to hold 6 public meetings in preparation for the Board of Supervisors public hearings to be scheduled on August 16th and August 23rd, 2011. And finally, authorize the use of $100,000 in appropriations for contingencies by a 4/5 vote of the Board of Supervisors and direct the Auditor Controller to increase appropriation in the Chief Executive Office Operations and Services budget as detailed in the attached budget journal form. and we'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Would you have any questions or comments?
Mr. Chairman, I do have some comments, and I'm in full support of this proposal. It's proper for us to do it right and do it right the first time. When it comes down to individuals who've applied in District 1, my district, I just want to take an opportunity to thank the five applicants who submitted applications to serve on this committee. The process that we've identified is fair and proper, and I want to make that clear because I'm going to deviate from the process slightly. The procedure allows each supervisor to pick one person from those applicants within their district and the other at random, and I chose to choose both of mine from random. Again, there's nothing wrong with the process. The process is correct in the way they're doing it, and I don't want my colleagues to think any differently of me or of their vote by doing it the way that's been outlined. I have a circumstance in my district. I have a family member who's applied to be on this commission who happens to also be the vice mayor of Riverbank. Very capable of doing serving on a committee, but I just feel that it's important for me to have my people chosen at random so that there's no appearance of any conflict of interest.
Any other comments?
I'm following the same rule. I'm going to be choosing my choice randomly for the same reasons. I have five very qualified candidates, so and doing it for the same reason.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I only have two people who've applied, so I suppose I could be at random also, since they're both pretty well shoe-ins. And I guess since we're all, I'm going to go ahead and stick with the original procedures here, and I've chosen one, and we'll go the rest of the
way. I likewise. We'll do the same thing. We'll make a choice of one.
Can you get
also thank the six applicants.
Okay. If there are, we actually have a next part of this process, which will be the formal selection process. If after you take action on the matter before you now.
I open it to the public. Any comments? If there are no further comments, I'll bring it back to the board. All those in favor say aye. Or someone make a motion.
I'd like to make a formal motion that we approve the six staff recommendations.
Second?
Second.
Then moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? Then passed. Now let's proceed.
And now we have the selection of the Ad Hoc Redistricting Advisory Committee. As we've indicated, we have 11 persons to be selected. The board member selections, one member from each district. I would ask the clerk we'll start with District 1. We'll pick the first name at random.
And I've asked that my colleague, Supervisor Withrow, make the pulls from my bag.
This is Cynthia Tomlinson.
Okay. The second board member selection, District 2.
Dorinda Soyseth from Denier.
District 3.
So I can just, I want to thank first everybody that did. Probably we actually had no one to begin with, and I made a phone call to here, and we ended up then with, I think, five or six by the time we were done. So I thank everyone who's very qualified that did apply. The one that I chose to begin with, when I called when I figured we had no one applying, was Maggie Mejia, who's very active in the district. So.
And she's your appointment?
Yeah, that's my, I'm sorry, that is my appointment.
Okay, and Maggie Mejia then. District 4?
I too want to thank all six who applied, and I'm appointing Lewis Friedman.
Okay. in District 5.
With me. Well, Larry Bean is the one I called, so again, okay, I only have two.
So the supervisor, okay, you only have two, so the vote beyond supervisor selection is Larry Beaner. Now the random district selections, we'll ask the clerk to draw one name from each of the five. Thanks.
District 1 is Reg Blair Smith. District 2 is Sharon Silva. District 3 is John Irwin III. District 4 is Luis Enrique Bustamante, and District 5 is William J. Parks.
And we'll take all of the remaining names and put them in one bag, and we'll draw 11th member with that one. Shake them up a little
bit. Right, and Mike, sorry about that.
And the winner is?
Donald Ulrich, District 2.
Very good. We have all 11 members. Thank you all very much. This will be an action item with these 11 names that you will consider at the May 3rd, 2011 board meeting. Thanks very much.
We will now go on to B14, Dr. John Walker.
As Dr. Walker comes up, I would like to express my appreciation to three members of the Chief Executive Office who have worked so diligently and so hard for about 3 months to prepare for this day. David Jones, Mark Lesser, and Sandy Regalo have done a yeoman's job preparing this presentation for you this morning, the charter, the agreements, and all the related documents.
Good morning, Chairman Monteith, members of the board, Mr. Robinson, Mr. Dorn. I'm John Walker, County Health Officer, and with me today is Phoebe Leung, Assistant Director, Health Services Agency. This morning we're presenting the annual public health report. It's a little different this year. It's really a summary of the past decade. 10 years ago, in April 2001, we presented a similar report where we looked at the health trends of the 90s. Most of that report focused on communicable disease trends. This one, as you may have noticed, is quite different. And it's quite different because the challenges of the 21st century are not about communicable disease. The epidemics of the 21st century are about chronic disease. And that's where we'll focus today. Next, please. This is my favorite slide. And this really is about 21st century public health. It's not about a building on Scenic Drive in front of the former county hospital. It's about a system. And I really need to thank our former public health director, Clee Moore, for her insight and vision, and she brought this to us through an initiative called MAP, M-A-P-P, Mobilizing Action for Partnership and Planning. And this really was focused around redefining the public health system. And what this graphic demonstrates is who are the partners within the public health system. And it may not show well, but you see all those lines connecting? And that's because we are interconnected and we are interdependent, and all of us contribute to the public's health. So there you are, elected officials, okay? Over here we have the media. Up here we have law enforcement. There are a couple of abbreviations I want to go over. Phoebe, on the top row where it says MCOs, those are managed care organizations such as our HMOs, and Phoebe down here, CHCs. Those are community health centers, which are safety net clinic systems such as Health Services Agency, Golden Valley. All of these contribute to the public's health. Next, please. I want to go through a few significant trends, beginning with where we have seen improvements. The darker lines with the diamond are for our county. The lower line with the square is a comparison to California as a whole. And as you see, for all mortality during the first decade of the 21st century, we had a 10% reduction compared to 13% for California as a whole. Now, you may recall from prior reports that we gave you our ranking compared to other counties. This one is about comparing ourselves to ourselves during that decade. Next, please. Okay, so this looks at cancer mortality, nearly a 10% decrease. Next. This is one of the more dramatic changes that we have seen during the past decade, which is almost a 28% decrease in coronary heart deaths within our county. Next is stroke mortality within our county, nearly 26% decrease compared to about 35% for the state as a whole. What I want to point out here, and on the prior slide, is there's a dotted line that you see there. And that dotted line is a national objective called Healthy People 2010. So for stroke, we were better than the national objective for Healthy People 2000. And Phoebe, if you can go back to the prior slide. For a cardiovascular heart disease, we approached the Healthy People 2010 objective, didn't quite reach it. The state as a whole did exceed it. So now, the next two slides are areas for great concern as we look at the next 10 years. Diabetes. Diabetes, during the past 10 years, an entire decade, both for our county and for California, no significant improvement in mortality. There was not a Healthy People 2010 national objective for that. And then the next one is even more alarming, which is the issue of obese adults within our county. As you look at it, California as a whole had a 25% increase. Our county had almost a 56% decrease, and this is alarming. Frankly, we feel that it contributes to the fact that we have seen no improvement in our diabetes mortality. Next, Phoebe is going to share with you some of our approaches and strategy for the next 10 years to address some of these serious chronic issues. Phoebe.
Good morning, Chairman Monteith, members of the board, Mr. Robinson, Mr. Drury. In the past decade, as Dr. Walker mentioned, we have seen a decrease in the mortality rates of heart disease, stroke, and cancer. And it is significant. But at the same time, it shows that the prevention of chronic disease is a long-term process. It takes a comprehensive and coordinated effort involving multiple levels of intervention. And also, in addition, it needs a lot of collaboration. We need to be involving everybody that Dr. Walker mentioned earlier in the public health system, each with their areas of expertise, to jointly address the prevention. And this is what we have been doing for the past decade to achieve some of the results that you've seen earlier. As Dr. Walker has a favorite slide, this is my favorite slide. We call it the spectrum of prevention, and public health has been using this model to address a lot of public health issues. The theory or principle behind this is that we're expanding prevention efforts beyond the individual knowledge and skills and moving up the spectrum to involve a lot of multiple, multifaceted, multidisciplinary activities that to achieve the results. We know that in order to sustain change and for people to sustain their healthy behavior, a person or individual has to be able to apply and practice the individual knowledge that they have acquired. But at the same time, the community, the system, and the environment has to promote, support, and facilitate the healthy behavior. And this is what we have done. Evidence-based studies have shown that activities performed at the higher level of the spectrum will make more impact on the prevention and also more sustainable. So in the past 10 years, we have been using this model and implementing activities throughout the spectrum. And importantly, we have been fostering coalitions and networks. We have established more than 10, 15 coalitions working together. And in the public health report that you have, we have highlighted the important work of some of these coalitions. Moving forward, we know that we have to stay on the course and we have to continue our prevention efforts. Evidence-based studies have also indicated that health outcomes are not only affected by behaviors and health risk factors, but also some of the more upstream factors that we call determinants of health. In a previous report to you, our 2008 community health assessment had indicated four of these broad determinants. These are access to health information and health care, basic needs, which includes food, shelter, child care, education, which means schooling and educational attainment, and the built environment. As mentioned earlier by Dr. Walker, diabetes and obesity are of great concern to us, and we will need to continue to address these through these four broad determinants. So, what should we do? Our framework for healthy standards laws. Our prevention strategies, we're using three guidance. First, it's a national initiative that Dr. Walker mentioned earlier. It's called Healthy People. The Healthy People Initiative is a national initiative that provides science-based 10-year national objectives to improve the health of all Americans. And the Healthy People 2020 is focusing on areas to decrease health disparities through the social determinants of health approach. Some of the focus areas identified in Healthy People 2020 are health access, or access to health, and social determinants of health. These, incidentally, are the areas that our community health assessment has identified 2 years ago, and all our community partners have been working on. So that is our second guidance, which is our local initiative called the Community Health Improvement Plan. This plan is a document that outlines and documents all the work that all the partners in our community have been doing to address chronic disease. And thirdly, but very importantly, it's our guidance of leveraging resources. This is what we have been doing for the past 10 years to achieve some of the results, and we'll be continuing to do that. This is just a visual to show you one of the many community health improvement meetings that we have, and you can see a lot of members from different disciplines in the community. I know you cannot read all the names here, but we just want to show you all the memberships, all the member organizations in the county working together for the community improvement. And it takes 3 slides. And this is the list of chronic disease-related coalitions whose work we have highlighted in our report. So in closing, it brings back to our first slide, which is the public health system. We feel that it's very important to engage everyone in our community to achieve chronic disease prevention. And we have done that for the past 10 years, and we'll continue to do that for the next 10 years. At this time, we would like to ask your acceptance of our report, and we'll be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Any comments or questions by the board?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I've worked on the West Side and with different cities to form the healthcare task force. And you know, looking at these statistics, we are getting a little bit better in Stanislaus County in most things, but we still fall behind the state average. That's very clear in your statistics. And we put together the 3 cities on the West Side, including Destin and Newman and Patterson, and we have worked with the school districts too, and I think that is a key part of what we're doing, because the obesity, which probably leads to strokes and coronary heart disease and diabetes, really starts with bad habits in our early age. So I think going into the schools and promoting a healthier lifestyle and better eating habits and exercise and is probably the best bang for the buck. I just want to make those comments. I don't know if you agree, but it's kind of where our task force is going with this.
And yes, we do agree.
It's a very good report, by the way.
Thank you, sir.
I have one question for you. It seems like obesity and strokes would be directly tied to diabetes and obesity, which are, you know, have been stagnant or increasing. How is it that our mortality rates are dropping so quickly on the cardiovascular side? I mean, we've had substantial drops. Is it better medical care in those areas, better medicine?
The answer is I'm not certain for the reason. Some of it is related to technology. I think some of it is related to public education about early intervention. But it is seemingly disparate, and it's an issue that we are going to be taking to our partners, because we are very concerned about the seeming paradox that you're describing, Supervisor. And one of the things that we hope to bring back to your board next year is some of the answers to these questions, because I think it will make a difference.
Supervisor Brian, please go
ahead. Before we close, I do want to make 2 quick acknowledgments. Phoebe's retiring this year, and I just have to applaud her as our champion for health promotion and chronic disease prevention. Phoebe.
Thank you.
And then last, I'd like to introduce you, if you haven't met our new public health director, Colleen Woolsey. Please stand. And we're looking forward to what she's going to bring during the next decade. Thank you.
If there are no additional comments or questions, I open it to the public. Any comment? Question? If not, I bring it back to the board and I ask for a motion.
I'll make a motion to accept the report.
Okay. Second?
I'll second that.
Been moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Passed. We will now go on to B-15 with Petty Hill Thomas.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Mr. Robinson, Mr. Doring, Patty Hill-Thomas from the Executive Office. We are pleased this morning to bring to you the next in a series of very complex and intense actions related to moving forward with our county's Juvenile Commitment Center project. I'd just like to take a moment and tell you in short words, because if I described the whole process to you, we'd be here for a very long time, that this indeed has been a monumental effort. And I'm very grateful for our legal team led by John Doring, Jack Doring, and Joan Cox, who's in the room with us today, our probation team, our capital projects team, our planning department, and virtually everyone who has touched this effort. Just by way of background, you may recall that our county was awarded, look ahead, $18 million in state funds in a very tumultuous time financially for the state to build a 60-bed facility to house sentenced youth offenders. This facility will fill a much-needed gap in our juvenile justice system, and presently we have no place to put sentenced youth or any of the rehabilitative programs that our probation team is planning to provide. This facility will be adjacent to the existing juvenile hall. It has a 60-bed total capacity in its first phase, multi-purpose room and kitchen. The project is $24.2 million in total. The state, through the lease revenue bonds authorized by SB 81, this is the juvenile justice realignment already in place and approved by the legislature a couple of years ago, awards $18 million to Santa Claus County, and our county match is $6.2 million, made up of detention public facility fees, criminal justice public facility fees, the value of the land that is contributed for this project, and just last week your board committed an additional $75,000 for needed driveway improvements that will be done prior to the completion of construction. This is an interesting relationship between the county and the state and our first ever lease revenue bond project. And I will keep a smile on my face to tell you that there's an advantage at being first in the state and there's a disadvantage at being first in the state. So we in the state of California on the juvenile justice side are putting this together in real time. You might recall the AB 900 projects, the adult incarceration facilities. There are a couple of adult facilities in other counties ahead of us, but this is the first Juvenile Commitment Center project to actually be scheduled for the approval of the state and the Pooled Investment Money Board. I'm showing you this picture because the uniqueness of this financing is important. You'll see the dotted line shows the project area, and for the term of the financing that the state has while they retire the debt, that property essentially is dedicated to the state of California, and the county will have a sublease for the facility until that debt is required, and then fully re-own our property and the facility for its forever use as part of the justice continuum on the Blue Gum Avenue site. The next picture is a picture you've seen many times before. As you know, this project is in its final design. We'll be bringing that back to you. And as we speak, the state fire marshal and our design team in Sacramento are poring over last-minute details to move the project forward. This shows you in the colored parts of the diagram where the facility is located on the bottom of your screen, and I'm sorry that's so low, is the existing juvenile hall. And you see shadowed boxes out toward my left, your right, of where future facilities can be built at the Blue Gum site. And in accordance with our master plan, this site will serve the needs of the county for decades and decades and decades to come. The test here was that not only will this project sit there, but there'll be other opportunities. So both our adult facilities at the Public Safety Center and our juvenile facilities at the Blue Gum site have much capacity for future generations to meet future needs. Next slide, please. This is the short abbreviated course of the task work, and as you can see from June of 2008, when you approved the updated needs assessment, there has been a tremendous effort by many people, including the leadership of your board. Many of you traveled to Sacramento to testify on behalf of this project. There has been a full environmental review process, design review, internal looks by our environmental resources, because there is a kitchen as a part of this project, and the completion of due diligence for the lease revenue bond financing. I would tell you that it's the most complicated real estate transaction our county staff has seen between the county and the state. But there's much, much still to do. Today we're asking for your approval of the project, delivering construction agreements and a variety of agreements that I'll describe in a moment. This project is slated for State Public Works Board approval both in May and June, and consideration by the Pooled Investment Money Board in June, all intended to make the project funding available prior to the end of the fiscal year and in time for us to bid this project this summer and proceed. I want to caution you, because this is a project that we work on every day and every night, there are still many hurdles to be passed through in order to receive the actual funding. And we made an important commitment to you that we keep today, that is that we won't ask you to award a construction project locally here until we have those state funds totally secured and in the bank. Today we have before you a set of what I believe council would also describe as a series of very complex and interrelated agreements. And if you can look at this graphic for a moment, you can see that we represent Stanislaus County on your behalf. The state of California is represented by a number of individual agencies, some of whom are working together for the first time on this type of project. There's the State Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, the State Corrections and Standard Authority, the California Department of Finance, the State Treasurer, the Pooled Monies Investment Board, the General Services Agency, and the State Public Works Board. And they all have their own legal counsel, every one of them, so extra kudos was really, I think, appropriate for Jack Doering and for Joan Cox, because this has been a tremendous effort. What we have before you today is the project delivery and construction agreement. It provides for the lease of the site to the state, as I described earlier, and the construction of the project by the county. It will provide for the interim state funding loan that will go to the State Pooled Investment Board, and that will be repaid by lease revenue bonds by the state of California. It provides for the design and oversight and construction of the project, defines all of the eligible project costs, and also will provide an interim loan to Stanislaus County, because the lease revenue bonds are sold at the end of the project as opposed to the beginning of the project. The construction agreement before you today is an agreement between the California State Corrections Authority. They're the regulatory agency in California for jail and juvenile justice construction and facilities. This project agreement describes the scope, the cost, and the schedule requirements, which are absolute and we are required to follow and achieve. It also describes in detail what your board has already approved in the financing plan last December, both the hard and soft match to achieve the $18 million. As you noted in our agenda item, there are a number of other agreements to be executed, and we've asked for the authority for the project manager and county council to complete those agreements in the form presented to you today and execute them. They include the ground lease, which is essentially a lease for the term of the bond financing of that project area that I described. They include the right of entry for construction and operation for the California Department of Corrections, and a series of indenture agreements that are issued with the state bonds that tie all of this fiscal and legal relationship together.
Well, here we are today, April 26th. The board's action today will drive us to a May 13th State Public Works Board meeting to establish the project agreements and preliminary plans, a June 10th State Public Works Board meeting consenting to the ground lease and right of entry after final design, and a June 15th State Pooled Money Investment Board and loan request. This is a very aggressive schedule. Both the state and the county staff are working very hard to have this approved prior to the end of the fiscal year. We will be back in your boardroom after the successful completion of those activities to ask you to issue a notice to proceed and consider the final design for the project. We would then, with your approval, we're not asking you to approve that today, ask you to consider a notice inviting bids, award the construction contract at the end of the summer, and complete construction in February of 2013. We have before you today a series of recommendations. First, asking you to authorize the chairman of the board to sign those two major overriding agreements, the project delivery and construction agreement and the construction agreement for the Juvenile Commitment Center project, to authorize the project manager and county council to complete on behalf of the county in substantially the same form as presented today the other agreements, including the project scope, cost, and schedule description, the form of the ground lease, the form of right of entry for construction and operation, the sublease, the participating county's funding cash, and description of our in-kind match agreements, all included in your packet. With that, I'd like to turn it over to Chief Jerry Prowers to make some comments. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I'll be brief. Patty did a great job of kind of summarizing where we're at today. As she said, if we actually outlined to you what got us to today, we could spend the next several days talking about all of the issues and obstacles that have been overcome by the county in dealing with the state. I have to thank Patty and her team. They've done an outstanding job of overcoming many of the obstacles, the legal obstacles, the environmental issues, the financing issues, you name it. They've done an outstanding job of this. Patty and I have gotten pretty good at playing good cop, bad cop with the state. One of us rushes through the door like our hair's on fire, and the other one puts it out, and so they listen. We've used velvet gloves. We've used boxing gloves with the state. We have literally got in cars and driven to Sacramento and met with anybody and everybody who needed to be met with to make sure that we keep this project on its timeline. It's interesting, we started this project, it was awarded in March of 2009. 25 months later, we're sitting here on the precipice of getting some money to actually start the bulldozers and start this project. But we are still almost 2 years away from occupying the facility. So we're really only about halfway through this marathon that we started on. And it has been a bruising marathon at times. I can't tell you how many nights Patty and I have traded emails late into the evening trying to figure out strategy to get around the state's next obstacle that they've thrown at us. And sometimes those obstacles come daily. It's very, very difficult dealing with the state, but we're committed to getting this project done because it's going to be good for our county in many aspects. Patty mentioned AB 900, which was the adult twin version of this project. The AB 900 projects got a 2-year head start on the SB 81 projects, the juvenile projects. There's only one AB 900 project that has gotten to the point where it's been funded in the state of California. We were 2 years behind, and we were right on their heels in getting funded for this with the SB 81 project. We are the first project that's going to be funded in the state of California on the juvenile side, and only the second in both of those legislative actions. So I think that speaks volumes to the amount of resources that the county team has put into it, both on the probation side, the CEO's office, and all of the other departments that have worked on this project. And certainly I feel a great sense of pride in how we've been able to do this. I think there were many instances where lesser teams would have folded up their tent and said, this isn't worth it. This is just too much bureaucracy to deal with. So I'm here to sing the praises of the group, to ask for your support to continue this process, understanding that it is a long process and we're about halfway through it. But frankly, once we get the check written, it'll be a downhill slide from that point forward. We are at a point where we are finalizing many of the agreements and on the verge of getting that final fiscal commitment from the state. We are trying to get that prior to the end of the fiscal year. We feel that's important. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions, or I'm sure Patty would as well.
Any questions from the board or comments?
I have one here. The lease, we receive credit for the property that we're contributing towards our match, but then we're leasing this to the state for the term of the bond. And then at the end of, so when we say we're leasing that, are we actually receiving money? We don't receive money for the lease. No.
We receive the $18 million to construct the facility. Essentially, because they're using the lease revenue bond, the bond holders have the right, if the state were to default on the bonds, to have the use of the facility in its land. The land needs to be synonymous with the facility.
The secure is kind of.
Yes, and in the end, the county will wholly own the facility, and I say re-own the land. We always own the land through the course of the lease, but we're required to assure the bondholders that are buying the lease revenue bonds that it is an entire reusable project. We would, if there were a default, on behalf of the state of California, this is not a county financing nor a county financial obligation, the $18 million, we would have the right to continue to use that facility under a different term, but it's the tying of the land and the facility together that allows the state to use the lease revenue bond approach to finance the project.
Okay, so let's just say security for this thing to happen. Okay.
It's like a mortgage,
yeah,
basically. Interestingly enough, or one of the concerns that we addressed when we first started this whole financing mechanism, because it is foreign to us, in historical terms, the state has typically given us money and we've built the project on our own land. We haven't had any ongoing obligation post construction completion. So we had some concerns, well, what happens if the state defaults and things like that? And after the due diligence that the county's done legally and with discussions with the state, constitutionally the state's obligations are number one to schools and number two to bondholders in that order of priority. So even if the state were to default, I'm not an expert on this, but because of the high priority for those bond obligations, it's fairly certain that bondholders would be made whole in that type of doomsday scenario.
Okay, great, thank you.
One interesting point I might add, although we find it interesting, the state in the first 8900 project that's ahead of us and in this project required a 50-year ground lease. And we were able to successfully negotiate that didn't make any sense. The ground lease can only be tied to the debt. So in the agreements before you, that concession was made. And we think that's legitimate and appropriate given the county's needs for the facility and its future opportunities at that site.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Any further comments or questions?
No, just want to thank you guys because I know we hear this all the time, the same thing. And I know we're not at the finish line, but keep working hard.
Thanks.
We will.
This time I turn it over to the public. Any comments or questions? If not, I bring it back to the board. And before we make a motion, I would like to recognize the work of a former supervisor on this project. Jeff Grover was very involved. So at this time, I think it's appropriate that we recognize his contribution on it. At this time, may I have a motion?
Motion to approve all staff recommendations.
Second?
I'll second that.
Been moved and second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? It's passed.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, now we have the county, let's see here, okay.
Correspondence.
Pardon?
Okay, we'll have correspondence.
This board has received a letter from the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission. Excuse me, this is very loud. Regarding the status of their San Joaquin Pipeline System project between the San Joaquin River and the city of Tracy, which is a part of their Head Hetchy Water System Improvement Program.
Refer to the Department of Planning and Community Development.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
Acknowledge receipt of claim and refer to Chief Executive Office, Risk Management Division. At this time, Board of Supervisors have any reports?
I do, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to call attention to our correspondence from the Hetch Hetchy Water System Improvement Plan. This organization has been right up front with what they're going to do, when they're going to start. They've come to visit me. They've talked to property owners. And this is the way a project should be done. You look at this as a stark contrast to the PG&E's pipeline that goes across my district, where it's been like pulling teeth trying to get any information out of them or to even speak to the property owners. And I think PG&E could take a lesson from Hetch Hetchy Water and Power and then how to do a project and to keep the county and the landowners informed.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Any other reports?
Yes, I would like to add to that that PG&E is also having a public meeting at Chatham School on May 5th, 7 to 9 p.m. That's one. Another thing that I want to bring to everyone's attention, Don Pedro is currently going through the relicensing with the Federal Energy and Regulatory Commission through FERC. We know that the reason Stanislaus County is because of the irrigation system, and that turns into surface water treatment facilities and other things. I would like to see this board, they're having a hearing at the Doubletree on May 11th from 7 to 8:30. It would be great if we could show up, maybe have the chairman comment, but anyone that's available. I really think that probably the single most important thing that's happening in this county in the next month is that hearing. So hopefully we can stay engaged in that process.
Supervisor Kay, in the morning they'll be at Stanislaus State doing a hearing as well.
Yes.
So I think I can attend the morning one and not the evening one at Doubletree, but I fully intend to be there.
Thank you.
That takes care of our report. Okay, at this time, the Legislative Fiscal Management Report, Chief Executive Officer.
Thank you, Chairman Monteith. You have one matter that I'd like to bring to the public's attention, and we are, as an agency and organization, fairly quiet and methodical in the processes that we undertake, and we try to do the best job in a very transparent way, but not surrounded with hype. I say this because we completed, after about a 2-year process, the reintroduction of our Tier 2 retirement benefit system this morning with the actions approved by the Board of Supervisors. To my knowledge, we are the only public agency in the state of California that has fully implemented a non-enhanced retirement system, and we've been very methodical in doing that. I want to recognize and acknowledge the Board of Supervisors for your leadership over and your strong position relative to bringing retirement costs under control and your ongoing support. I want to recognize two people in this system who have done an extraordinary job, Nancy Bronstein and Jody Hayes, who negotiated on behalf of the Board of Supervisors and Chief Executive Offices all of the benefits reductions for all of the labor organizations. And speaking of labor, I want to recognize and thank all of our labor organizations for the concessions that they have made in bringing this significant change forward. Many, many agencies throughout California and throughout the country have talked about this. Very few have had the vision and the wherewithal to see it through to completion. So my congratulations and thanks to all of those who have worked and contributed to this monumental effort as I said, it was very quietly implemented today, but I think it's certainly worth noting.
At this point, we'll adjourn this meeting, and then we have a county council comment.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we have closed session planned for this morning. The first matter is a conference with legal counsel to discuss anticipated litigation involving two cases pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9, Subdivision C. We do not expect a report out on those two matters. We also have conference with legal counsel to discuss existing litigation involving one case. That is the Central Valley Regional Water Quality Control Board Cease and Desist Order R5-2011-0021. This will be held pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9, Subdivision A, and we may or may not have a report out on that matter.
Thank you. Thank you.